if someone had turned on the electricity in a long-abandoned building. I had not been kissed like that since Celia left me. I had not been kissed with desire, the kind of desire that spurs desire since the love of my life walked out the door. And here was Max, two deformed burgers in between us, his warm lips on mine. "That is what I mean," he said when he pulled away from me. "Do with that what you will." The next morning, I woke up as an Oscar winner with a precious 6-year-old eating room service in my bed. There was a knock at the door. I grabbed my robe. I opened the door. In front of me were 2 dozen red roses with a note that said, "I have loved you since I met you. I have tried to stop. It will not work. Leave him, ma belle. Marry me. Please. X-O-M.
"We should stop there," Evelyn says. She's right. It's getting late, and I suspect I have a number of missed calls and emails to return, including what I know will be a voicemail from David. "Okay," I say, closing my notebook and pressing stop on the recording. Evelyn gathers some of the papers and stale coffee mugs that have accumulated over the day. I check my phone. 2 missed calls from David, 1 from Frankie, 1 from my mother. I say goodbye to Evelyn and make my way onto the street. The air is warmer than I anticipated, so I take off my coat. I pull my phone out of my pocket. I listen to my mother's voicemail first, because I'm not sure I'm ready to know what David has to say. I don't know what I want him to say, and thus, I don't know what will disappoint me when he doesn't say it. "Hi, honey," my mom says. "I'm just calling to remind you that I'll be there soon. My flight gets in Friday evening, and I know you're going to insist on meeting me at the airport because of that time I got lost on the subway. But don't worry about it. Really, I can figure out how to get to my daughter's apartment from JFK or LaGuardia. Oh, God, you don't think I accidentally booked the flight to Newark, do you? No, I didn't. I wouldn't have. Anyway, I'm so excited to see you, my little dumpling baby. I love you." I'm already laughing before the message is over. My mother has gotten lost in New York a number of times, not just once. And it's always because she refuses to take a cab. She insists that she can navigate public transportation, even though she was born and raised in Los Angeles and therefore has no real sense of how any 2 modes of transportation intersect. Also, I've always hated it when she called me her dumpling baby, mostly because we both know it's a reference to how fat I was as a child. I looked like an overstuffed dumpling. By the time her message is over and I'm done texting her back, "So excited to see you. We'll meet you at the airport. Just tell me which one," I'm at the subway station. I could easily make the argument to myself that I should listen to David's voicemail when I get to Brooklyn. And I almost do. I very nearly do. But instead, I stand outside the stairwell and hit play.
"Hey," he says, his gravelly voice so familiar. "I texted you, but I didn't hear back. I'm in New York. I'm home. I mean, I'm here at the apartment, our apartment. Or your apartment, whatever. I'm here, waiting for you. I know it's short notice, but don't you think we should talk about things? Don't you think there's more to say? I'm just rambling now, so I'm gonna go. But hopefully, I'll see you soon." When the message is over, I run down the stairs, swipe my card, and slip onto the train just as it's leaving. I pack myself into the crowded car and try to calm down as we roar through each stop. What the hell is he doing home? I get off the train and make my way to the street. I put my coat on when I hit the fresh air. Brooklyn feels colder than Manhattan tonight. I try not to run to my apartment. I try to remain calm, to remain composed. "There is no need for you to rush," I tell myself. "Besides, I don't want to show up out of breath, and I really don't want to ruin my hair. I head through the front entrance and up the stairs to my apartment. I slip my key into my door, and there he is, David. In my kitchen, cleaning dishes as if he lives here. Hi, I say, staring at him. He looks exactly the same. Blue eyes, thick lashes, cropped hair. He's wearing a maroon, heathered t-shirt and dark gray jeans. When I met him, as we fell in love, I remember thinking that the fact that he was white made things easier, because I knew he would never tell me I wasn't black enough. I think of Evelyn the first time she heard her maid speaking Spanish. I remember thinking that the fact that he wasn't that well-read meant he would never think I was a bad writer. I think of Celia telling Evelyn she wasn't a good actress. I remember thinking that the fact that I was clearly the more attractive one made me feel better, because I thought that meant he'd never leave. I think of how Dawn treated Evelyn, despite her being arguably the most beautiful woman in the world. Evelyn rose to those challenges. But looking at David right now, I can see that I've hidden from them. Perhaps my entire life. Hi, he says. I can't help but vomit the words out of my mouth. I do not have the time or energy or restraint to curate them well or deliver them mildly. What are you doing here? I say. David puts the bowl in his hand into the cupboard and then turns back to me.
I came back to iron out a few things, he says.
And am I something to iron out? I ask. I put my bag down in the corner. I kick off my shoes.
You're something I need to set right, he says. I made a mistake. I think we both did.
Why, until this moment, did I not realize that the issue is my own confidence? That the root of most of my problems is that I need to be secure enough in who I am to tell anyone who doesn't like it to go fuck themselves? Why have I spent so long settling for less, when I know damn well the world expects more?
I didn't make a mistake, I say. And it surprises me just as much, if not more, than it surprises him. Monique, we were both acting rash. I was upset that you wouldn't move to San Francisco, because it felt like I had earned the right to ask you to sacrifice for me, for my career.
I start formulating a response, but David keeps talking.
And you were upset that I would ask that of you in the first place, because I know how important your life is here. But there are other ways to handle this. We can do long distance for a little while, and eventually I can move back here, or you can move to San Francisco down the line. We have options. That's all I'm saying. We don't have to get a divorce. We don't have to give up on this.
I sit down on the couch, fiddling with my hands as I think. Now that he says it, I realize what has made me so sad these past few weeks, what has plagued me and made me feel so terrible about myself. It isn't rejection, and it isn't heartbreak. It is defeat. I wasn't heartbroken when Dawn left me. I simply felt like my marriage had failed, and those are very different things. Evelyn said that just last week, and now I understand why it got under my skin. I have been reeling because I failed, because I picked the wrong guy for me, because I entered the wrong marriage, because the truth is that at the age of 35, I have yet to love someone enough to sacrifice for them. I've yet to open my heart enough to let someone in that much. Some marriages aren't really that great. Some loves aren't all-encompassing. Sometimes you separate because you weren't that good together to begin with. Sometimes divorce isn't an earth-shattering loss. Sometimes it's just two people waking up out of a fog. I don't think
I think you should go home to San Francisco, I say to him finally. David comes and joins me on the couch. And I think I should stay here, I say. And I don't think a long-distance marriage is the right play. I think divorce is the right play. Monique, I'm sorry, I say as he takes my hand. I wish I didn't feel that way. But I suspect deep down you think it too. Because you didn't come here and tell me how much you miss me, or how hard it has been to live without me. You said you didn't want to give up. And look, I don't want to give up either. I don't want to fail at this. But that's not actually a great reason to stay together. We should have reasons why we don't want to give up. It shouldn't just be that we don't want to give up. And I don't. I don't have any. I'm unsure how to say what I want to say gently, so I just say it. You have never felt like my other half. It is only once David gets up off the sofa that I realize. I assumed we would be sitting here talking for a long time. And it is only once he puts on his jacket that I realize he probably assumed he would sleep here tonight. But once he has his hand on the doorknob, I realize that I have put into motion the end of a lackluster life in the interest of eventually finding a great one.
I hope one day you find someone who feels like the other half of you, I guess,
David says. Like Celia. Thank you, I say. I hope you find it too. David smiles in a way that is more of a frown, and then he leaves. When you end a marriage, you're supposed to lose sleep over it, aren't you? But I don't. I sleep free. I get a call from Frankie the next morning, just as I'm sitting down at Evelyn's. I consider putting it through to voicemail, but there's already too much swirling around in my brain. To add, call back Frankie might just put me over the edge. Better to handle it now. Have it behind me. Hi, Frankie, I say.
Hey, she says.
Her voice is light, almost cheerful.
So we need to schedule the photographers. I assume Evelyn will want them to come to her there at the apartment.
Oh, that's a good question, I say. One second. I mute my phone to turn to Evelyn. They're asking when and where you'll want to do the photo shoot.
Here is fine, Evelyn says. Let's aim for Friday.
That's 3 days away.
Yes, I believe Friday comes after Thursday. Do I have that right?
I smile and shake my head at her and then unmute Frankie. Evelyn says here at the apartment on Friday.
Late morning, maybe, Evelyn says. 11.
11 okay, I say to Frankie.
Frankie agrees. Absolutely fantastic.
I hang up and look at Evelyn. You want to do a photo shoot in 3 days?
No, you want me to do a photo shoot, remember? You're sure about Friday, though? We'll be done by then, Evelyn says. You'll have to work even later than normal. I'll make sure Grace has those muffins you like, and the coffee from Pete's that I know you prefer.
Okay, I say. That's fine, but there's still a lot of ground to cover.
Don't worry, we'll be done by Friday.
When I look at her skeptically, she says,
You should be happy, Monique. You're going to get your answers.
When Harry read the note Max had sent me, he was stunned silent. At first I thought I had hurt his feelings by showing it to him, but then I realized he was thinking. We had taken Connor to a playground in Coldwater Canyon in Beverly Hills. Our flight back to New York left in a few hours. Connor was playing on the swings as Harry and I watched her. Nothing would change between us, he said, if we divorced. But Harry, John is gone, Celia is gone. There is no need to hide behind double dates. Nothing would change. We would change, I said. watching Connor pump her legs harder, swing higher. Harry was watching her through his sunglasses, smiling at her. He waved to her. "Good job, honey," he called out. "Remember to keep your hands tight on the chains if you're going to go that high." He had started to control his drinking a bit. He had learned to pick and choose his moments of indulgence. And he never let anything get in the way of his work or his daughter. But I still worried about what he'd do if left too much to his own devices. He turned to me. "We wouldn't change, Ev. I promise you that. I would live in my house just like now. You'd live in yours. I'd come by every day. Connor would sleep at my place the night she wanted. If anything, appearances-wise, it might make more sense. Pretty soon people are going to start asking why we own two different houses." "Harry, you do what you want. If you don't want to be with Max, don't be. I'm just saying that there are some fairly good reasons for us to get divorced. And not many cons, except that I won't call you my wife anymore, which I've always been so proud to do. But we will still be as we've always been, a family, and I think it would be good for you to fall in love with someone. You deserve to be loved that way. So do you." Harry smiled sorrowfully. "I had my love, and he's gone. But for you, I think it's time. Maybe it will be Max, maybe it won't, but maybe it should be somebody." "I don't like the idea of divorcing you," I said, "no matter how meaningless it might actually be." "Dad, watch," Connor said as she flung her legs into the air, swung high, and then leaped, landing on her feet. She nearly gave me a heart attack. Harry laughed. "Outstanding," he said to her, and then he turned to me. "Sorry, I might have taught her that." "I figured." Connor got back onto the swing, and Harry leaned toward me and put his arm around my shoulders. "I know you don't like the idea of divorcing me," he said, "but I think you do like the idea of marrying Max. Otherwise, I don't think you would have bothered to show me that note." "Are you really serious about this?" I asked. Max and I were back in New York at his apartment. It had been 3 weeks since he had told me he loved me. "I am very serious," Max said. "What is this saying? As serious as cancer? A heart attack." "Fine, I am as serious as a heart attack." "We barely know each other," I said. "We have known each other since 1960, ma belle. You simply do not realize how much time has passed. That's more than 20 years. I was in my mid-40s. Max was a few years older. With a daughter and a fake husband, I thought falling in love again was out of the question for me. I wasn't sure how it would ever happen. And here was a man, a handsome man, a man I did rather like, a man I shared a history with, who was saying he loved me. "So, you're suggesting I leave Harry just like that, because of what we think might be between us?" Max frowned at me. "I am not as stupid as you think I am," he said. "I don't think you're stupid at all." "Harry is a homosexual," he said. I felt my body pull back as far away from him as possible. "I have no idea what you're talking about," I said. Max laughed. "That line didn't work when we were getting burgers, and it won't work now." "Max, do you enjoy spending time with me?" "Of course I do." "And do you not agree that we understand each other, creatively speaking?" "Of course. Have I not directed you in 3 of the most important films of your career?" "You have." "And do you think that is an accident?" I thought about it. "No," I said, "it's not." "No, it isn't," he said. "It's because I see you. It is because I ache for you. It is because, from the very moment I set my eyes on you, my body was full of desire for you. It is because I have been falling in love with you for decades. The camera sees you as I see you. And when that happens, you saw. You're a talented director. Yes, of course I am, he said, but only because you inspire me. You, my Evelyn Hugo, are the talent that powers every movie you are in. You are my muse, and I am your conductor. I am the person who brings out your greatest work. I breathed in deeply, considering what he was saying. You're right, I said. You are absolutely right. I can't think of anything more erotic than that, he said, than being each other's inspiration. He leaned in close to me. I could feel the heat of him on my skin. And I can think of nothing more meaningful than the way we understand each other. You should leave Harry. He will be fine. No one knows what he is, and even if they do, no one's talking. He doesn't need you to protect him anymore. I need you, Evelyn. I need you so badly, he whispered into my ear. The heat of his breath, the way his stubble scratched my cheek, awakened me. I grabbed him. I kissed him. I pulled my shirt off. I tore his. I unfastened the belt of his pants, flinging the buckle. I ripped apart the buttonfly of my jeans. I pushed myself against him. The way he grabbed me back, the way he moved, made it clear he was yearning for me, that he couldn't believe his luck to be touching me. When I pulled off the straps of my bra and exposed my breasts, he looked me in the eye and then placed his hands on my chest, as if he'd unlocked a hidden treasure. It felt so good to be touched like that, to set free my desire. He lay down on the couch and I sat on top of him, moving the way I wanted to, taking what I needed from him, feeling pleasure for the first time in years. It felt like water in the desert. When it was over, I didn't want to be apart from him. I wanted to never leave his side. You'd be a stepfather, I said. Do you get that? I love Connor, Max said. I love children, so to me that is a benefit. And Harry will always be around. He will never go away. He's a constant. He does not bother me. I've always liked Harry. I'd want to stay in my house, I said, not here. I won't uproot Connor. Fine, he said. I was quiet. I didn't know exactly what I wanted, except that I wanted more of him. I wanted the experience of him again. I kissed him. I moaned. I eased him on top of me. I closed my eyes, and for the first time in years, when I closed them, I did not see Celia. Yes, I said as he made love to me. I'll marry you. Disappointing Max Girard.
Now this. June 11th, 1982. Evelyn Hugo divorces Harry Cameron to marry director Max Girard. Evelyn Hugo is the marrying kind. After 15 years of marriage, she and producer Harry Cameron are going their separate ways. The two have just come off a winning streak, both taking home Oscar Gold earlier this year for their film All For Us. But sources claim Evelyn and Harry have been separated for some time. Their marriage turned into little more than friendship within the past few years. Some are claiming that Harry has been living in the home of their late friend John Braverman, just down the street from Evelyn. Meanwhile, Evelyn must have used that time to warm up to Max Girard, her director on All For Us. The two have announced plans to marry. Only time will tell if Max is the lucky ticket to happiness for Evelyn. But what we do know is that he will be husband number 6.
Max and I got married in Joshua Tree with Connor, Harry, and Max's brother Luke. Max had originally suggested Saint-Tropez or Barcelona for our wedding and honeymoon, but both of us had just finished movies shooting in Los Angeles, and I thought it sounded nice, just a small group of us in the desert. I dispensed with white, having long ago stopped feigning innocence. Instead, I wore an ocean blue maxi dress. My blonde hair feathered ever so slightly. I was 44. Connor wore a flower in her hair. Harry stood next to her in dress pants and a button-down. Max, my groom, wore white linen. We joked that it was his first wedding, so he should be the one to wear white. That evening, Harry and Connor flew back to New York. Luke flew back to his home in Lyon. Max and I stayed in a cabin, a rare night alone. We made love on the bed, on the desk, and in the middle of the night on the porch underneath the stars. In the morning, we ate grapefruit and played cards. We flipped channels on the television. We laughed. We talked about movies we loved, movies we'd shot, movies we wanted to make. Max said he had an idea for an action movie starring me. I told him I wasn't sure I was fit to be an action hero. "I'm in my 40s, Max," I said. We were walking in the desert, the sun beating down on us. I had forgotten the water in the cabin. "You are ageless," he said to me, kicking up sand as we went. "You can do anything. You are Evelyn Hugo." "I'm Evelyn," I told him. I stopped in place. I grabbed his hand. "You don't always need to call me Evelyn Hugo." "But that is who you are," he said. "You are the Evelyn Hugo. You are extraordinary." I smiled and kissed him. I was so relieved to feel loved, to feel love. I was so exhilarated by wanting to be with someone again. I thought Celia would never come back to me, but Max, he was right there. He was mine. When we got back to the cabin, the two of us were sunburned and parched. I made us peanut butter and jelly for dinner, and we sat in bed and watched the news. It felt so peaceful. Nothing to prove, nothing to hide. We went to sleep with Max cradling me. I could feel his heartbeat against my back. But the next morning when I woke up and my hair was out of place and my breath smelled, I looked over at him, expecting to see a smile on his face. Instead, he looked stoic, as if he had been staring at the ceiling for hours. "What's on your mind?" I said. "Nothing." His chest hair was graying. I thought it made him look regal. "What is it?" I said. "You can tell me." He turned and looked at me. I fixed my hair, feeling somewhat embarrassed at how unkempt I looked. He looked back up at the ceiling. "This is not how I imagined it." "What did you imagine?" "You," he said. "I imagined the glory of a life with you."
"And now you don't?"
"No, that's not it," he said, shaking his head. "Can I be honest? I think I hate the desert. There's too much sun and no good food. And why are we here? We are city people, my love. We should go home." I laughed, relieved that it wasn't anything more. "We still have 3 days here," I said. "Yes, yes, I know, ma belle, but please let us go home."
"Early?
We can get a room at the Waldorf for a few days instead of here."
"Okay," I said, "if you're sure."
"I'm sure," he said. And then he got up and took a shower. Later on at the airport, as we waited to board, Max went to buy something to read on the flight. He came back with People magazine and showed me the write-up of our wedding. They called me a daring sexpot and Max my white knight. "Pretty cool, no?" he said. "We look like royalty. You look so beautiful in this picture." "But of course you do. That's who you are." I smiled. But all I could think about was Rita Hayworth's famous line, "Men go to bed with Gilda, but wake up with me." "I think maybe I will lose a few pounds," he said, patting his belly. "I want to be handsome for you."
"You are handsome," I said. "You've always been handsome."
"No," he said, shaking his head. "Look at this photo they have of me. I look like I have 3 chins.
It's just a bad picture.
You look marvelous in person. I wouldn't change a single thing about you, really." But Max wasn't listening.
"I think I will stop eating fried foods. I have gotten too American, don't you think? I want to be handsome for you."
But he didn't mean handsome for me.
He meant handsome for the pictures he'd be taking with me. My heart tore just a little as we boarded the plane. It split further and further as I watched him read the magazine during the flight. Just before we landed, a man flying in coach came up to first class to use the bathroom and did a double take when he saw me. When he was gone, Max turned to me smiling and said, "Do you think all these people are going to go home and tell everyone they were on a flight with Evelyn Hugo?" The moment he was done saying it, my heart had completely torn in half. It took me about 4 months to realize that Max had no intention of even trying to love me, that he was only capable of loving the idea of me. And then, after that, it seemed so silly to say it, but I didn't want to leave him because I didn't want to get divorced. I'd only married a man I loved once before. This was only the second time in my life I had gone into a marriage believing it could last. And after all, I hadn't left Don. Don had left me. With Max, I thought that something might change, something might click, something might make him see me as I truly was and love me for it. I thought maybe I could love the real him enough that he'd start loving the real me. I thought I could finally have a meaningful marriage with someone. But that never happened. Instead, Max paraded me around town like the trophy I was. Everyone wanted Evelyn Hugo, and Evelyn Hugo wanted him. That girl in Boutantrain mesmerized everybody, even the man who created her. And I didn't know how to tell him that I loved her too, but I wasn't her. In 1988, Celia took the role of Lady Macbeth in a film adaptation. She could have submitted herself for Best Actress. There was no other woman with a bigger part in the movie than her. But she must have submitted herself for Best Supporting, because when the ballot came out, that was what she was nominated for. The moment I saw it, I knew it had been her call. She was just that smart. Naturally, I voted for her. When she won, I was in New York with Connor and Harry. Max had gone to the awards that year alone. It was a fight between the two of us. He wanted me with him, but I wanted to spend the evening with my family, not in a control slip and 6-inch heels. Also, if I'm being entirely frank, I was 50 years old. There was an entire new generation of actresses to compete with. They were all gorgeous, with smooth skin and shiny hair. When you are known for being gorgeous, you cannot imagine suffering a fate worse than standing next to someone and falling short. It did not matter how beautiful I used to be. The clock was ticking, and everyone could see it. My roles were starting to dry up. The parts I was being offered were the mothers of the great roles being offered to women literally half my age. Life in Hollywood is a bell curve, and I had prolonged my time at the top for as long as possible. I'd lasted longer than most, but I had come around the corner now, and they were all but putting me out to pasture. So no, I did not want to go to the Academy Awards. Instead of flying to L.A. and spending the day in a makeup chair, and then sucking in and standing up straight in front of hundreds of cameras and millions of eyes, I spent the day with my daughter. Louisa was on vacation, and we had not found someone we liked to step in for her. So Connor and I spent the day making a game out of cleaning the house. We made dinner together. Afterward, we popped some popcorn and sat down with Harry to watch as Celia won. Celia was wearing a yellow silk dress with a ruffled edge. Her red hair, now shorter, was pulled back in a chignon. She was older, certainly, but never more breathtaking. When they called her name, she got up on the stage and accepted her award with the grace and sincerity that audiences had always known her for. And just as she was about to leave the microphone, she said, "And to anyone tempted to kiss the TV tonight, please don't chip your tooth." "Mom, why are you crying?" Connor asked. I put my hand to my face and realized that I had teared up. Harry smiled at me and rubbed my back. "You should call her," he said.
It's never a bad idea to bury hatchets. Instead, I wrote a letter. My dearest Celia, congratulations. You absolutely deserve it. There is no doubt you are the most talented actress of our generation. I wish for nothing more than your complete and total happiness. I did not kiss the TV this time, but I did cheer just as loudly as I did the other times. All my love, Edward. No, Evelyn. I sent it with the peace of sending off a message in a bottle, which is to say that I expected no response. But a week later, there it was. A small, square, cream-colored envelope addressed to me. My dearest Evelyn, reading your letter felt like gasping for air after being trapped underwater. I hope you will forgive me for being so blunt, but how did we make such a mess of it all? And what does it mean that we have not spoken in a decade, but I still hear your voice in my head every day? XO, Celia. My dearest Celia, I own all of our missteps. I was selfish and short-sighted. I can only hope that you have found bliss somewhere else. You deserve so much happiness, and I am sorry I could not give that to you. Love, Evelyn. My dearest Evelyn, you are dealing in revisionist history. I was insecure and petty and naive. I blamed you for the things you did to keep our secrets. But the truth is, each time you stopped the outside world from coming into our life, I felt immense relief, and all my happiest moments were orchestrated by you. I never gave you enough credit for that. We were both to blame, but you were the only one to ever apologize. Please let me rectify that now. I'm sorry, Evelyn. Love, Celia. P.S. I watched 3 a.m. some months ago. It is a bold, brave, important film. I would have been wrong to stand in the way of it. You have always been so much more talented than I ever gave you credit for. My dearest Celia, do you think lovers can ever be friends? I hate to think of the years we have left in this life, wasted by continuing not to speak. Love, Evelyn. My dearest Evelyn, is Max like Harry? Like Rex? Love, Celia. My dearest Celia, I am sorry to say that no, he's not. He is different. But I am desperate to see you. Can we meet? Love, Evelyn. My dearest Evelyn, to be frank, that news breaks me. I do not know if I could bear seeing you, given those circumstances. Love, Celia. My dearest Celia, I have called you many times in the past week, but you have not returned my calls. I'll try again. Please, Celia. Please. Love, Evelyn. Hello? Her voice sounded exactly like it used to. Sweet, but somehow firm. It's me, I said. Hi. The way she warmed up in that moment made me hopeful that I might be able to put my life back together the way it should have always been. I did love him, I said, Max, but I don't anymore. The line was quiet. Then she asked, What are you saying? I'm saying I'd like to see you. I can't see you, Evelyn. Yes, you can. What do you want us to do, she said. Ruin each other all over again? Do you still love me? I asked. She was silent. I still love you, Celia. I swear I do. I don't think we should talk about this. Not if what? Nothing has changed, Evelyn. Everything has changed. People still can't know who we really are. Elton John is out of the closet, I said. Has been for years. Elton John doesn't have a child and a career based on audiences believing he's a straight man. You're saying we'll lose our jobs?
I can't believe I have to tell you this, she said. Well, let me tell you something that has changed, I told her. I no longer care. I'm ready to give it all up. You can't be serious. I'm absolutely serious. Evelyn, we haven't even seen each other in years. I know you were able to forget me, I said. I know you were with Joan. I'm sure you were with others. I waited, hoping she would correct me, hoping she would tell me there had been no one else, but she didn't. And so I continued. But can you honestly say that you stopped loving me? Of course not. And I can't say that either. I have loved you every single day. You married someone else. I married him because he helped me forget you, I said, not because I stopped loving you. I heard Celia breathe deeply. I'll come to L.A., I said, and you and I will have dinner, okay? Dinner? She said. Just dinner. We have things to talk about. I think we at least owe each other a nice long talk. How about the week after next? Harry can watch Connor. I can stay for a few days. Celia was quiet again. I could tell she was thinking. I got the impression that this was a deciding moment for my future, our future. Okay, she said. Dinner. The morning I left for the airport, Max slept in late. He was supposed to be on set later in the afternoon for a night shoot, so I squeezed his hand goodbye and then grabbed my things from the closet. I couldn't decide if I wanted to take Celia's letters with me or not. I had kept them all, with their envelopes, in a box at the back of my closet. Over the past few days, as I was gathering what I would take, I packed them and then unpacked them, trying to decide. I had been rereading them every day since Celia and I started talking. I didn't want to be apart from them. I liked to run my fingers over the words, feeling the way the pen had embossed the paper. I liked hearing her voice in my head, but I was flying to see her, so I decided I didn't need them. I put on my boots and grabbed my jacket, then unzipped my bag and pulled the letters out. I hid them behind my furs. I left Max a note. I will be back on Thursday, Maximilian. Love, Evelyn. Connor was in the kitchen, grabbing Pop-Tarts before heading over to Harry's house to stay while I was gone. "Doesn't your dad have Pop-Tarts?" I asked. "Not the brown sugar kind. He gets the strawberry ones, and I hate those." I grabbed her and kissed her on the cheek. "Goodbye. Be good while I'm gone," I said. She rolled her eyes at me, and I wasn't sure if it was for the kiss or the directive. She had just turned 13, beginning her ascent into adolescence, and it was already breaking my heart. Yeah, she said. I'll see you when I see you. I went down to the sidewalk to find my limo waiting. I gave the driver my bag, and at the very last minute, it occurred to me that after my dinner with Celia, she might tell me she didn't want to see me again. She might tell me she didn't think we should talk anymore. I might be on the flight back, aching for her more than I ever had. I decided I wanted the letters. I wanted them with me. I needed them. "Hold on one moment," I said to the driver, and I dashed back into the house. I caught Connor coming out of the elevator just as I was going in. "Back so soon?" she said, her knapsack on her back. "I forgot something. Have fun this weekend, sweetheart. Tell your dad I'll be home in a few days." "Yeah, okay. Max just woke up, by the way." "I love you," I said to her as I pushed the button in the elevator. "I love you, too," Connor said. She waved goodbye and headed out the front entrance. I made my way upstairs and walked into the bedroom, and there, in my closet, was Max. Celia's letters, which I had kept in such pristine condition, were flung about the room, most of them torn from the envelopes as if they were nothing more than junk mail. "What are you doing?" I said. He was in a black T-shirt and sweatpants. "What am I doing?" he said. "That is too much. You coming in here asking me what I am doing? Those are mine." "Oh, I see that, ma belle." I leaned down and tried to take them from him. He pulled them away. "You are having an affair?" he said, smiling. "How very French of you." "Max, stop it." "I do not mind some infidelity, my dear, if it is respectfully done and one does not leave evidence." The way he said it, I realized he had slept with people outside our marriage, and I wondered if any woman was ever really safe from men like Max and Don. I thought of how many women out there thought they could prevent their husbands from cheating if only they were as gorgeous as Evelyn Hugo. But it never stopped any man I loved. I am not cheating on you, Max. So would you cut it out? Maybe you are not, he said. I suppose I can believe that. But what I can't believe is that you are a dyke. I closed my eyes, my anger burning so hot inside me that I needed to check out of the world, to momentarily gather myself in my own body. I am not a dyke, I said. These letters beg to differ. Those letters are none of your business. Maybe, Max said. If these letters are just Celia St. James talking to you about her feelings for you in the past, then I am in the wrong here. And I will put them away right now, and I will apologize to you immediately. Good. I said if. He stood up and came closer to me. It is a big if. If these letters were sent leading up to you deciding to visit Los Angeles today, then I am angry because you are playing me for a fool. I really do think that if I told him I had absolutely no intention of seeing Celia in Los Angeles, if I really sold it well, he would have backed off. He might have even said he was sorry and driven me to the airport himself. And that was my gut instinct, to lie, to hide, to cover up what I was doing and who I was. But just as I opened my mouth to feed him a line, something else came out. I was going to see her. You're right. You were going to cheat on me? I was going to leave you, I said. I think you know that. I think you've known that for some time. I am going to leave you. If not for her, for me.
For her?
He said. I love her. I always have. Max looked floored, as if he had been pushing me in this game, assuming I'd forfeit. He shook his head in disbelief.
Wow, he said.
Incredible. I married a dyke.
Stop saying that, I said.
Evelyn, if you have sex with women, you are a lesbian. Don't be a self-hating lesbian. That's not becoming. I don't care what you think is becoming. I don't hate lesbians at all. I'm in love with one. But I loved you too.
Oh, please, he said. Please don't try to make me any more of a fool than you already have. I've spent years loving you, only to find it meant nothing to you.
You didn't love me for one goddamn day, I said. You loved having a movie star on your arm. You loved getting to be the one who slept in my bed. That's not love. That's possession.
I have no idea what you're talking about, he said.
Of course you don't, I said, because you don't know the difference between the two.
Did you ever love me?
Yes, I did. When you made love to me, and you made me feel desire, and you took good care of my daughter, and I believed that you saw something in me that no one else saw. When I believed you had an insight and a talent that no one else had. I loved you very much.
So you are not a lesbian, he said.
I don't want to discuss this with you.
Well, you're going to. You have to.
No, I said, gathering the letters and envelopes and shoving them into my pockets. I don't.
Yes, he said, blocking the door. You do.
Max, get out of my way. I'm leaving.
Not to see her, he said. You can't.
Of course I can. The phone started ringing, but I was too far away to answer it. I knew it was the driver. I knew that if I didn't leave, I might miss my flight. There would be other flights, but I wanted to catch that one. I wanted to get to Celia as soon as possible.
Evelyn, stop, Max said. Think about this. It makes no sense. You can't leave me. I could make one phone call and destroy you. I could tell anyone, anyone at all, about this, and your life would never be the same.
He wasn't threatening me. He was simply explaining to me what was so clearly obvious. It was as if he was saying, "Honey, you're not thinking clearly.
that won't end well for you. You're a good man, Max, I said. I can see you being angry enough to try to hurt me, but I've known you to at least try to do the right thing most of the time. And what if this time I don't, he said. And there finally was the threat. I'm leaving you, Max. It either happens now or it happens later, but it's happening sometime. If you decide you want to try to bring me down over it, then I guess that's just what you'll have to do. When he wouldn't move, I shoved him out of the way and walked right past him out the door. The love of my life was waiting, and I was going to go get her back. When I got to Spago, Celia was already seated. She was wearing black slacks and a gauzy, cream-colored sleeveless blouse. The temperature outside was a warm 78 degrees, but the restaurant's air conditioning was on high, and she looked just a little bit cold. Her arms were covered in goosebumps. Her red hair was still stunning, but now clearly dyed. The golden undertones that had been there before, the result of nature and sunlight, were now slightly saturated, coppery. Her blue eyes were just as enticing as they always had been, but now the skin around them was softer. I'd been to a plastic surgeon a few times in the past several years. I suspected she had, too. I was wearing a deep V-necked black dress, belted at the waist, my blonde hair, a bit lighter now from the gray that had been creeping in and cut shorter, was framing my face. She stood when she saw me. "Evelyn," she said. I hugged her. "Celia." "You look great," she said. "You always do." "You look just like you did the last time I saw you," I said. "We never did tell each other lies," she said, smiling. "Let's not start now." "You're gorgeous," I said. "Ditto." I ordered a glass of white wine. She ordered a club soda with lime. "I don't drink anymore," Celia said. "It's not sitting with me the way it once did." "That's fine. If you want, I can toss my wine right out the window the moment it gets to the table." "No," she said, laughing. "Why should my low tolerance be your problem?" "I want everything about you to be my problem," I said. "Do you realize what you're saying?" she whispered to me as she leaned across the table. The neck of her blouse opened and dipped into the breadbasket. I was worried it would graze the butter, but somehow it didn't. "Of course I realize what I'm saying." "You destroyed me," she said. "Twice now in our lives. I have spent years getting over you." "Did you succeed, either time?" "Not completely." "I think that means something." "Why now?" she asked. "Why didn't you call years ago?" "I called you a million times after you left me. I practically knocked down your door," I reminded her. "I thought you hated me." "I did," she said. She pulled back a bit. "I still hate you, I think. At least a little bit." "You think I don't hate you, too?" I tried to keep my voice down, tried to pretend it was a chat between two old friends. "Just a little bit?" Celia smiled. "No. I suppose it would make sense that you do. But I'm not going to let that stop me," I said. She sighed and looked at her menu. I leaned in conspiratorially. "I didn't think I had a shot before," I told her. "After you left me, I thought the door was closed. And now it's open a crack, and I want to swing it wide open and walk in." "What makes you think the door is open?" she asked, looking at the left side of the menu. "We are having dinner, aren't we?" "As friends," she said. "You and I have never been friends." She closed her menu and put it down on the table. "I need reading glasses," she said. "Can you believe that? Reading glasses." "Join the club." "I can be mean sometimes when I'm hurt," she reminded me. "You're not exactly telling me something I don't know." "I made you feel like you weren't talented," she said. "I tried to make you think you needed me because I made you legitimate." "I know that." "But you've always been legitimate." "I know that now, too," I told her.
I thought you would call me after you won the Oscar. I thought maybe you would want to show me, you'd want to shove it in my face. Did you listen to my speech? Of course I did, she said. I reached out to you, I said. I picked up a piece of bread and buttered it, but I put it down immediately, not taking a single bite. I wasn't sure, Celia said. I mean, I wasn't sure if you meant me. I all but said your name. You said she. Precisely. I thought maybe you had another she. I had looked at other women besides Celia. I had pictured myself with other women besides her. But everyone, for what had felt like my whole life, had always been divided into Celia and not Celia. Every other woman I considered striking up a conversation with might as well have had not Celia stamped on her forehead. If I was going to risk my career and everything I loved for a woman, it was going to be her. There is no she but you, I told her. Celia listened and closed her eyes, and then she spoke. It was as if she had tried to stop herself and simply couldn't. But there were he's. This old song and dance, I said, trying to stop myself from rolling my eyes. I was with Max. You were clearly with Joan. Did Joan hold a candle to me? No, Celia said. And Max didn't hold a candle to you. But you're still married to him. I'm filing papers. He's moving out. It's over. That's abrupt. It's not, actually. It's overdue. And anyway, he found your letters, I said. And he's leaving you? No, he's threatening to out me if I don't stay with him. What? I'm leaving him, I said. And I'm letting him do whatever the hell he wants, because I'm 50 years old, and I don't have the energy to be controlling every single thing anyone says about me until I die of old age. The parts I'm being offered are shit. I have the Oscar on my mantle. I have a spectacular daughter. I have Harry. I'm a household name. They will write about my movies for years to come. What more do I want? A gold statue in my honor? Celia laughed. That's what an Oscar is, she said. I laughed, too. Exactly. Excellent point. I already have that, then. There's nothing else, Celia. There are no more mountains to climb. I spent my life hiding so no one would knock me off the mountain. Well, you know what? I'm done hiding. Let them come and get me. They can throw me down a well as far as I'm concerned. I'm signed on to do one last movie over at Fox later this year, and then I'm done. You don't mean that. I do. Any other line of thinking, it's how I lost you. I don't want to lose any more. It's not just our career, she said. The ramifications are unpredictable. What if they take Connor away? Because I'm in love with a woman? Because they think both her parents are queers. I sipped my wine. I can't win with you, I said finally. If I want to hide, you call me a coward. If I'm tired of hiding, you tell me they'll take my daughter. I'm sorry, Celia said. She did not seem sorry for what she had said. So much as sorry that we lived in the world we lived in. Do you mean it? She asked. Will you really give it up? Yes, I said. Yes, I would. Are you absolutely sure? She asked, just as the waiter put her steak down in front of her and my salad in front of me. I mean absolutely sure. Yes. Celia was quiet for a moment. She stared down at her plate. She seemed to be considering everything about this moment, and the longer she took to speak, the farther I found myself bending forward, trying to get closer to her. I have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, she said finally. I probably won't make it much past 60. I stared at her. You're lying, I said. I'm not. Yes, you are. That can't be true. It is true. No, it's not, I said. It is, she said. She picked up her fork. She sipped the water in front of her. My mind was reeling, thoughts bouncing around my brain, my heart spinning in my chest.
And then Celia spoke again, and the only reason I was able to focus on her words was that I knew